Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And just a reminder, for those of you listening on radio, you can also hear us commercial-free online and webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. We're going to visit the Den of Strangers, our fountain of useless information, and of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's get over to our exciting guest of today. What do you say?
Stand by.
Well, now we have on the phone, all the way from Basking Ridge, New Jersey, Ashish Jain. He is the director of the Mobile Applications and Services Research Group at Applied Communication Services. Welcome to the program, Ashish.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, the name of, you're giving a presentation at the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference that's going on in mid-November in Boston. And the title of your presentation is something about a new mobile biometric modality based upon usage context. And that's got me absolutely... I know it makes sense to the people on the vetting committee, but I've got to get my arms around it. So explain to us what it is that you're going to be talking about.
Sure, certainly. So... I think let's deconstruct the idea of a biometric, a mobile biometric, and authentication, because that's really the crux of what we are really trying to do here. So, you know, most of us know what a biometric really means. So it's essentially any characteristic or a trait which can help in the identification of a person. So you have physical traits like your fingerprints, your iris scans, your, you know, face recognition, or your ear, you know, the geometry of your ear, and you know, that can be used to identify you. You also have behavioral traits like how you type, or how you move the mouse when you interact with a desktop computer, or even how you walk. So all of these are essentially biometrics which can be used to identify you. Now, what we are trying to do here is we are essentially trying to look for biometrics to identify you in the context of using a mobile device. So when you're using a smartphone or a tablet, you know, the traditional ways to recognize you is by things like username and passwords.
Sure.
And we have, and those have problems. You know, people have archaic usernames, they get stolen, you know, they forget about it. So is there something inherent, very unique about you, which you'll, of course, never ever forget, and can we really use that to identify you? So that's really what a new mobile biometric is, and that's really what we are trying to investigate and identify.
Well, I know there's a lot of movement on these sorts of things. I guess we go back 100 years or more, we come up with the fingerprints that are supposed to be, unique to each of us. And now, of course, there's the iris, looking into the eyes and those sorts of things. We know that our DNA is unique to us, or supposed to be, except maybe with identical twins. But, you're talking about identifying me uniquely through a mobile device that goes beyond a password and a username and that sort of thing?
That's absolutely right. That's exactly what we are talking about. And I could actually... here is an example. As I said, there are some practical issues in using passwords. That actually is a bigger issue. The bigger issue is that these days, you know, you would like to identify not just at the beginning of your interaction. I would like to continuously maintain that as long as you're interacting with my system, I want to make sure that not only you gave me the right credentials in the beginning, but you are, you know, in many ways actively authenticated on a continuous basis, that you are still the same person who originally logged on to the service when you logged on. That's because the credentials get lost or the sessions get hijacked and things like this. So what we're really trying to do here is not just a one-time authentication. And this is what we in the industry call it active authentication. I want to continuously ensure that I still have the right person on the other end, because with the mobility and these mobile devices, you know, people are all over. And enterprises need to secure their core assets, like their data and files and whatever they have. And there's somebody out there in a distant land, and he might have stolen my phone and my credentials. So I really need to make sure that, you know, though the right username and password was supplied, how do I know it's still me?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the examples we are looking at is based on typical usage you may have. Can we learn that and then identify deviation from that typical usage? So if you're a road warrior, for example, you're always on the road, then it should not be unnatural for you to download, you know, a whole lot of email attachments as you are on the road, because you're typically on the road.
Okay.
And but on the other hand, if you're a guy who usually works from home or from office at certain times, and you are accessing through your either home Wi-Fi network or your office Wi-Fi network, and suddenly I'm finding that you're downloading a whole bunch of attachments, well, then I need to be a little more wary about, well, are you still the same guy you are? So those are the kind of patterns we are looking for, which would really help us, you know, not only identify you in the beginning, but continue to maintain that authentication. That's really the crux of the problem we are after.
All right. Okay. So my patterns would indicate what I'm doing, and I have these certain patterns, certain way of acting, maybe the way I even do keystrokes. And who's gonna keep this information? I mean, this has got to be a whole lot of details, minute details, and it's got to be put together in some sort of algorithm or something. I don't know. And who's gonna hang on to it? Who's gonna tip somebody off that they're not the person that they say they are, and what's going to happen? How does it all work?
That's an excellent question, actually. Yes, absolutely. There are lots of practical issues. So what we are doing here is think of it as a system we are trying to build, which learns by passively observing in a very supervised setting. So in the beginning, I give you a device and I say, oh, you're a Xi Jian, here's your device. Just use it for the next 24 hours the way you would use it. And while the person is normally using it, and only during that time, you collect a whole bunch of data and you try to extract the discriminating features. So in other words, our system is going to discount features which are not discriminating, so you're really not collecting, you know, at the end of the day, you're not going to be really making your decision based on, you know, thousands of features.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to come down to key features which will help you classify that user.
Okay.
Now, once the classifier has been developed, then there is another aspect of our system, which is that this classifier actually works on your device. So nothing is ever sent to the server. The classifier is trained, it is on your device, and from then on, your device actually makes the first level decision, and you are really not exchanging a whole lot of data. So in summary, you're absolutely right, there's a lot of information to collect, but the feature extraction problem is really well known, and we have some very sophisticated statistical learning algorithms which extract these features and kind of reduce the dimensionality of the problem. And that's one of the key differentiators we bring to solving this problem.
This is really a fascinating train of thought. I mean, what I think I heard you just say is that my unique activities will be stored on my own device, And so it's my property. It's not stored outside in the cloud someplace where somebody else has access to it. And if somebody gets my device and tries to use it and not use it in the way that I normally can use it, that the device may not function, or it may alert someone that somebody is using my device without authorization. Is that what I heard you say?
That's absolutely right. That's exactly what our goal is. This is really where we are going towards. This is very much an R&D effort, of course, but this is exactly what we want to achieve. It's the device which is eventually going to make the determination once the classifier is trained. So for the training, of course, we get a lot of data, and then we train. But once the trained model is pushed onto your device makes the decision.
Wow, I can imagine, though, that there could be an awful lot of you know, some pitfalls with this. One thing, you got to put it together. That means you're going to have a lot of memory storage. And then what if somebody, you know, changes their habits? Does that mean then the device isn't going to work, or how are they going to fail safe, and what's going to happen there? I mean, I'll take off. I don't use my credit card a whole lot, but once in a while I'll go on a long trip. And when I do, I sometimes will get a phone call saying, hey, this is not usual. A lot of expenses are being made. Is that really you doing this? So, you know, what are the pitfalls that you're going to run into these things, Ashish?
Yeah, that is certainly true. There are, you know, once you have learned and you certainly have a pattern or a usage. So this is really not a silver bullet. It's a multi-factor system. And at some stage, you are going to validate users based on your classifier. And just like what the credit card companies do, at some stage, you are going to use other factors to authenticate once you really run into those kind of issues. It all really depends upon what level of access a particular resource requires. If you really believe, and there is obviously our system has certainty associated with the predictions it makes. You know, it's essentially a predictive analytic model. Mm-hmm. It says that, well, given the past pattern, given the current usage, this is the confidence I have in saying that this is indeed the user who originally authenticated the system with the system. And then you have to make a decision. Am I willing to live with that uncertainty, or do I need to actively ask for additional authentication? Which is a lot better than asking for authentication for every single thing. Because typically that's what you would have to do today without active authentication. Because you will, for every resource, since you can no longer rely on the initial credentials, you're going to ask again and again and again. And that's very, very intrusive and unusable. We are trying to eliminate that inconvenience, if you will. And yes, there are going to be stages where you will have to retrain the model if your pattern changes. And you may have to use additional factors in case you really have confidence. You don't have confidence in your prediction, and you still would like to give access to the resource. And so yes, it's going to be a multi-factor combination once you put the whole system together.
And then who's going to be the customer? It's going to be the people that the hardware people that make the device and install this software or equipment that you're coming up with, or how?
The enterprise these days, right? Everybody would like to have the independence of working from home and things like those, using their devices or doing things on the go. That's part of the productivity bargain we have made. And yes, the way to really commercialize this is to really embed this thing as part of your overall enterprise security.
All right. Well, are there other interesting applications of this technology that we haven't touched on yet?
It's a very interesting area. And yes, absolutely. So, you know, so if you put a window in the future a little bit, so
that's good.
Obviously, what's unique about the mobile devices? They are extremely personal, right? Almost, you know, quite literally, we are wearing these devices already. They're on our belts all the time. And very soon, you know, you're going to have devices like the watch. You know, it's already out there. You're quite literally going to wear it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, we have this whole Internet of Things where everything is getting connected. So you know, my watch is talking to my my personal medicine delivery system. which is talking to my doctor, and my watch can now talk to my car, and my car can then talk to other car. So in the space of everybody talking to everybody else, active authentication is going to be extremely important. And so one of the example is as an anti-theft device. You know, car keys can be stolen.
Mm-hmm.
Once I have this watch, and this watch is a smart device, and I can have my, you know, this mobile biometric on it, you know, my car should know it's me, and should appropriately personalize the dashboard for me, appropriately personalize everything, and more importantly, you know, stop anti-theft. The other example, actually, which is more practical, is there are various scenarios where there are single-use licenses which software services provider give.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a license meant only for this user.
Okay.
You can use this software, but it's really only meant for you. And the problem plaguing them is that, you know, the password and username can be shared. So once again, they would like to minimize, you know, single-use licenses by using, again, you know, again, it's like an anti-theft kind of thing, but in the context of software. So yes, I we see a lot of use for this going forward as more and more devices get on board, and as well as our world, you know, intersects a lot with the cyber world where we are talking to other devices all the time. Active authentication, I think, is going to be an important technology to enable a lot of these interactions.
Yeah, devices talking to devices. I mean, we've got right now can remotely turn our air conditioning up and down, our lights on and off, and our garage door open and close. And recently, there was a report about somebody hacking in to that system and calling a guy on the telephone saying, "Do you mind if I turn your lights on and off and put your garage door up and down? And I want to test this out." And he didn't believe him. And all of a sudden, the lights went dim and the garage door went up. So there are certain dangers, and I can see where authentication has got to be certainly an important part of this. And how does this all fit into the whole security system versus the privacy debate?
I think you're pointing out some very relevant you know, points here, and you know, systems have to be still designed with security in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm. You know, there are going to be, you know, people are going to rush early to the market with solutions which are not proven, and people are going to find fault. But that's the life cycle of some of these products, and you know, sooner or later they are going to get a lot mature. Privacy debate, on the other hand, is extremely important in my view. And I think it really deserves some attention. So privacy, if you really look at it, there are two aspects which are troublesome. One is the idea where the data gets stolen.
Mm-hmm.
It's an outright theft using privileged credentials, for example.
Yeah.
I just had you know, the admin password. I got in and I got a whole bunch of passwords. Or somebody hacked into an accounting system and got the entire employee payroll, you know, system. So that's really the theft aspect of it. So I would argue that with active authentication, theft would go down. So the systems are going to be a little bit more secure, and the data would be better protected. Because it doesn't make any sense. I mean, how are you going to steal credentials now? I mean,
yeah.
What does it make? What sense does it make for you to steal the way I walk, for example?
Yeah.
That's my personal biometric.
Yeah.
If you steal it, what are you going to do with it? Unless you are a perfect imposter and you can exactly walk the way I walk. So you see, unlike physical credentials like tokens and passwords, it's very, very, very hard to steal. And as a consequence, the theft part would go down. The other aspect of privacy is really the misuse of data,
mm-hmm.
You know. So this work is, in general, part of a broader area called predictive analytics, and people are worried about predictive analytics, you know. They are you know, thinking about, well, it's very good that I can use predictive analytics to predict, based on my previous behavior, what kind of diseases I'm going to get. But what if that information is used for discrimination against employment, against, you know, whatever?
Oh, yeah.
So But unfortunately, that's really not a technology debate in my view.
Okay.
You know, that's you know, this is societal and you know, and a governance issue.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is here. It's a little bit too late for us to go back to the cave. And some of these issues with respect to how exactly the data has to be used has to be addressed at a more broader governance level, at a more broader societal level. And I'm not sure it's a technology problem. So in a nutshell, I really think that active authentication and things like those actually would prevent at least one type of privacy breaches, which is really the theft of data.
All right, well, you're going to present all this at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference going on in mid-November in Boston, and it is absolutely fascinating to me, and I know it will be to those who are listening to what you have to say. What do you hope to accomplish? I mean, you're not selling anything. Are you just trying to put ideas in people's heads of where things could go? Are you looking for collaborators? What do you want to be the takeaway in this thing? What do you want to accomplish at the conference?
I'm not sure, you know, what exactly is meant by not selling anything. We're always trying to sell ideas. So yes, our principal purpose for us to be at the conference is to, especially for homeland security purposes, new biometrics are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to achieve some meeting of minds with the folks out there. And like to see, and it'll be great to collaborate, of course, but we would like to certainly talk about some of the machine learning algorithms and the classifiers we have already discovered so far, and work with like-minded people to see if we can really have practical implementations and get some of this into the systems for our, you know, first responders to use and make our at least cyber systems a little bit more secure.
Well, that is really, really fascinating, Ashish. And I want to ask you really sincerely, you've had your mentors in your life. You're probably mentoring other people.
Yes. I could talk a lot about that. I'm not that old, and I don't claim myself to be very wise. But I'll stay to the context a little bit here, because there's a major debate going on between privacy and what these technologies enable, and I'll just make this as my voice of reason. Folks, you know, it's really too late to go back to the cave and, you know, shut off all our devices. And while one may be uncomfortable with the use of technology and personalization and the promise it has, we have to evaluate both the pros and cons before, you know, summarily rejecting either of those. It's my belief that it always helps to get educated on cybersecurity and privacy laws and privacy issues. Extremely important that we make our own decisions and not get swayed by, you know, what's going on out there. I really think that we are moving in a world where we are essentially streaming. We are streaming sensors 24 hours a day, and it's about time that we go back and start teaching in our, you know, right along the civic lessons or the U.S. history lessons as part of our early education, what it means to protect your data. How do you protect it? What are the implications of that? Because, you know, we can count on, you know, legislation, we can count on everything, but the single best line of defense is education. And I really think we are chartering into new territory here, and we have to go back to our high school education and start educating people about what this really all means. And I think checks and balances will take care of itself. And technology has its promise, and I think we're going to see it.
All right, Dr. Ashish Jain, Director of the Mobile Applications and Services Research Group at Applied Communication Sciences. Fascinating guest, generous with your time. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll look forward to having you back on the program as things progress in your sciences and things you're doing.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for the opportunity.
Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind
Who in the den of strangers will we meet today?
Euripides here. Man's greatest virtue is a judicious sense of what not to believe.